I'd like to call this council meeting to order for March 14th. Thank you all for coming today. We'll start off early with a changes approval to the agenda on 2.0. I have one change today. In the second item on the agenda, 9.2 will now become 9.3. Any other changes to the agenda? Yes, Councilor Fraley?
I'd like to ask, add a motion, please, under other. A copy of that motion. It's called the Council Sound System Recommendation Report.
And the title of that under other?
Council Sound System.
It's a motion.
Okay, any others? I would entertain a motion to approve the agenda as amended. Councilor Fisk moved, seconded. Councilor Fraley, any discussion? All in favor? It is unanimous, thank you very much. And now we are at presentations 3.1, SoSure Housing Action Coalition. I would ask Nancy Green to come forward and do a presentation.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
I recently switched from coffee to tea, and then with the time change, I'm really out of whack here. So bear with me this morning. Thank you, Mayor and members of council, for having me here this morning. On behalf of the SoSure Housing Action Coalition, I would like to thank you for your continued support and participation in the work of our coalition. For those of you who I have not yet met, I'm Nancy Green, and I am with Public Health Services and I'm a member of the planning team for SHAC. This morning, I'm pleased to be with you to share the results of our SoSure Collaborative Housing Needs Assessment, which we completed in 2016. And that your municipality supported and participated in. But before I dive into the results of the assessment, I'd like to take a quick couple of minutes to share with you a bit about the work of SHAC. As a coalition, we believe that all people should have access to healthy, safe, affordable housing options at every stage of life. And we work collaboratively to build awareness and facilitate action on the need for quality, safe, and affordable housing in Lunenburg and Queens County in particular, and Nova Scotia in general. And we have four main areas that we focus our activities: educating ourselves and others, policy and advocacy work, and research and monitoring, which this housing needs assessment falls under. This is a list of our current coalition members, which include counselors from each of our six municipalities in Lunenburg and Queens, along with Nova Scotia Health Authority, the Lunenburg County Community Health Board, Western Region Housing Authority, Second Story Women's Center, the Transition House Association, Aspetuggan Heritage Trust, and community members that volunteer and participate in our coalition. So what is affordable housing? And we talk about this a lot at our table, because we're often asked this and we discuss it as Councillor McLeod and Councillor Fancy. Maybe Councillor Fancy's just learning that we talk about this a lot. What is affordable housing? In its simplest terms, it's housing that is affordable. It's not any particular type of housing. It is not only social or government subsidized housing. It is housing, we see affordable housing along a continuum of different housing types that range from emergency shelter, transitional housing, social housing, onto non-market affordable rental housing, affordable home ownership, and in the market housing end of the continuum, affordable rental housing and affordable home ownership. For any community, having a mix of housing types along the continuum is needed to ensure all residents can access housing that is appropriate and meets their needs. There is a standard definition from the Canada Mortgage Housing Corporation called core housing need that is used to measure affordability in a community. And core housing need says that housing needs to be adequate, so not requiring major repairs. It needs to be suitable, having enough bedrooms for the household size. And it has to be affordable. It can't cost more than 30% of a household's before tax income. So if a household's current home is not adequate or suitable or affordable, and there's no option for them in their local community that is affordable or meets one of those, they are considered to be in core housing need. It's kind of a difficult idea to get your head around, but we tend to focus on the 30% measure. So if you're paying more than 30% of your income on housing, you're spending too much and it's putting you at risk. If you're paying 50% or more of your income on housing, then you are at risk for homelessness. So in our efforts to better understand what is happening in our communities, we wanted to do a needs assessment, and we did. It took us a while. And with financial support from Housing Nova Scotia, the provincial agency responsible for housing, and the Canada Mortgage Housing Corporation, and participation and support from the community and partners like you, we were able to do this. The report itself, I have one hard copy. It's really fancy, colorful. We're pretty excited about it. Provides a housing profile for each municipal unit in Lunenburg and Queens County, and provides an overview of what we learned at a regional level as well. And in November, it was awarded the Best Comprehensive Plan Award by the Atlantic Planners Institute, which we're pretty excited about. We started planning in 2013. Councillor McLeod was part of that. It's taken us a while to get all of our ducks in a row and get this project completed. We started with the idea of wanting to do a housing needs assessment because at the time we knew the census was out, or we thought the census was gone, and we knew that we needed to have access to information about what was happening in our community so that we can monitor things over time and assess what was, you know, what the situation was. So in 2014, 2015, we secured funding and our consultants, and we have hired David Harrison, who some of you will be familiar with, who did work here within the region. The investment strategy, attraction strategy, and Teal Architects that he partnered with, they were hired to complete the project. And so last winter, about this time actually, we were sending out our public survey to the community at the same time that the Queen's Care Society was also doing their survey on housing and transportation. We collected data that was available from the National Household Survey completed in 2011. We met with councils and communities, and we also engaged in a series of focus groups. And in 2016, our report was completed in the summer, and then there was a municipal election in winter, and here we are today, to be sent back. I just discussed the approach that we took in our assessment, which did include the focus groups with seniors. We conducted a focus group with a group of seniors, with women, low-income homeowners, youth and professionals in Lunenburg, and a couple other groups that are, I can't remember right now, but so we did a series of six focus groups, and all of the information that we gathered through this process has been used to inform what you see in the assessment and the final report. So at a regional level, this is a quick overview of the numbers in terms of rental costs across each of the municipalities, so you can see how you compare against others. The last column, the average of the National Household Survey information, Housing Nova Scotia information, and CMHC average rents is probably the most recent data. The other numbers are from previous surveys and are a bit older. This is a calculation that was done or an estimation that was done by the consultants, so I can't tell you exactly how they calculated it, but this is what they came up with. And you'll see that Region of Queens, it has the best average rent at $637 per month when compared to the other regions. At a regional level, we heard 44% of those who responded to the survey, which there was a public survey, a survey for landlords and developers, and a survey for service providers or people who might be supporting individuals in the community that would be facing housing challenges. So 44% of our respondents indicated that they're paying more than 30% of their income on shelter costs each month, which aligns with the core housing need numbers that we have for the region. Two-thirds of the respondents said that home ownership is important to them. 24% stated that they sometimes have trouble paying their mortgage or are constantly struggling to pay for it, so one in four. Over one in four people said that they were considering downsizing their current living situation. And 64%, or almost two-thirds of respondents, said that housing affordability is an issue across the six municipalities. This is one of the highlights that I thought maybe you would be interested in, given your role and perspective, from the Landlord and Developer Survey. So we asked them, what issues do you face, what issues do you see facing the housing sector in the community where your businesses are located? Among those, which probably aren't very surprising, weak local economy, unemployment is a concern. Property taxes for some, maybe not in other areas. Development costs, financing barriers comes out quite a bit. Needs are more specialized in smaller communities, weak demand, lack of land planning regulations. So there were a series of things that developers were telling us that were a challenge to them in their work. So what did we find out specifically about the Region of Queens? And I'm going to tell you that the first slide here has the numbers wrong. I couldn't change them, I tried. So the rental shelter costs, these are the average rental shelter costs from the National Household Survey. 619, it should say, rather than 654. And for ownership shelter costs, it should be 636. So those were from 2011. In the fall of this year, in October, this new census data will be released about housing and shelter costs. So we will be updating our profiles, and we will come back to you in share those numbers with you again when that information is available. We also looked at median shelter costs, which is a good, maybe a more accurate indication of what rental or housing costs are in a community, because it isn't affected by outliers, so the very low and the very high rental costs or shelter costs. So the median shelter cost for the Region of Queens is $598 per month. And even at that cost, 30% of tenants cannot afford the median shelter costs, and 20% cannot afford the median owner shelter costs. This slide shows you the comparison among the municipal units in terms of proportion of households unable to afford the median shelter costs. The purple is the rental, and the gray is the ownership. So you'll see Queens is right in the middle, I would say. Lunenburg, Town of Lunenburg, and Town of Bridgewater have the highest proportion of households unable to afford the shelter costs for both rental and ownership at 40%. In Queens, as I just said, 30% for renters and 20% for owners. And the median shelter costs are listed here as well for rental and ownership across the municipalities, with Queens at $598 and $444 median shelter costs.
Nancy, can
yeah.
I ask why? Like, I look at Mahone Bay, they're the lowest around, you know, we're looking at $538 compared to our $580 or $590.
Yeah.
I mean, they're growing. They're the only place in our district, it's up, I think it's up like 9% over that last spot, where we're down 5% in our growth, but keeping their rent, they're keeping their rentals down to $538. How does that?
Well, there isn't a lot of rental in Mahone Bay. Some of that is social housing that is subsidized by the government already. If you look at their ownership costs too, we found in some of our communities, you know, we kind of wondered, like, why is the ownership cost so low in some of our communities? But we also realized that we have an aging population that probably people are owning their homes, don't no longer have a mortgage, so their shelter costs each month are a little bit lower. In terms of rental, I think there isn't a lot of rental within Mahone Bay. Some of that is subsidized, or seniors are living in a nurse, an assisted living or the nursing home, so their costs might be a little bit lower because it's subsidized, I think is my understanding of the difference there.
Councilor Cloud?
When you talk about figures like that, under the social housing and all the other types of housing in communities, is there information about percentage of houses within, say, Queens that are under the social system, percentages that are under all these other types of
that data is within here,
okay.
I believe.
Yeah.
It's a big document, so it's hard to cover everything in a short presentation, but that information is in here.
And that would be crucial to some developers or people that, you know, where are the actual needs that aren't being met?
Yeah.
When
you look at what social housing is available in our communities, it's largely for seniors. We don't have a lot for families or individuals. And it's very, you know, mostly largely concentrated within Bridgewater, you know, proportion-wise. But of course, that's where there's a greater demand as well. There's also a large portion, I think, in the social, there's new data released recently. I think something like 13.8% of people in the social are living on low income. One of the higher percentages across the province. I remember being surprised when I first saw it because I thought, oh, I didn't realize we were struggling so much with low income. So there's a number of factors at play, but certainly that information is here in terms of percentage of households living with low income, as well as the information about government and subsidized housing is all included within the final report.
Yes, definitely.
When you talk about there is some assistance for seniors, but it seems like the families are kind of falling through the cracks. We don't often have a lot, like, it always seems to focus on seniors because we are a senior community.
Yeah. The demand is
demand
for seniors.
Right. So hopefully down the road and in the future there will be a concentration on an equal concentration on both those types of housing needs.
Yeah, certainly the demand isn't as great for families, but hopefully as our economy changes and hopefully grows, so will our demographics. And so we need to be prepared for that as well going forward.
Yeah.
But right now, we do have a large senior population with varying and changing needs. You know, from independent living to assisted living and to long-term care requirements. So it's a dynamic topic to look at in terms of what the needs are. They're always shifting. But for right now, we know in certain communities, there needs to be a larger focus on seniors. And in other communities, we need other types of housing that is just affordable for all. So again, we already looked at this slide, but again, just highlighting the numbers for you. So if you look at the 2011 National Household Survey, median shelter costs at $598. The average shelter cost in 2011 was $619, and today we're estimating the average is at $637. Come October, we'll have a better sense of what that is from the latest census. So all of that shows us that 20% of households generally in Region of Queens are requiring more affordable housing, or 1 in 5. That core housing need number or definition that I was talking about before, that it says you shouldn't be paying, that if you are paying more than 30% of your income on housing, for Region of Queens tenants, 44% of tenants are in core housing need within the Region of Queens. 15% for homeowners are in core housing need. So that means that they are facing strain and struggles in terms of maintaining their home and their household budget to cover the necessities each month. This slide allows you to see the comparison among the other municipalities. So you'll see that Town of Lunenburg, 55.8% of the population or of households are in core housing need, which is the highest. Town of Bridgewater is at 52%. And then Region of Queens comes in at the middle at 44%. I think the lowest is Town of Mahone Bay at 31% of people being in core housing need. So specific to the Region of Queens, we asked in our public survey, what concerns do you have about your housing in the next 5 years? And people had a list to choose from. So people are concerned about the cost of water, power, heat, utilities type of concerns, maintenance issues, including the cost of maintaining their home or doing maintenance is a significant concern. And the cost of rent or maintaining a mortgage, I would say those are the top three. Other concerns, need for seniors, safety or design issues. I think that probably comes from older homes where there are stairs and it's difficult for seniors to be moving around their home or being able to access an apartment that is accessible. Location and accessibility are also concerns. So we asked our consultants to identify a pilot project for each community based on what they heard through the consultation and from the numbers. And you can see there's a list of these here, and in the assessment itself there's more detail about the pilot projects that have been suggested. But for the Region of Queens, it is suggesting or encouraging the municipality to work with citizens to create a tenant collective. They could tell you a lot more about what that means, but I will do my best. So they see this as a partnership between the Queens Care Society and the municipality. I know that the Queens Care Society has done a report and has been doing quite a bit of work around seniors' housing needs in Queens County. And they often attend SHAC meetings as well. So the tenant pool is suggested to encourage investment and identify demand in the rental housing market for multiple unit buildings. The idea is to identify one or more sites that could be optioned, perhaps by the municipality, to allow time for site massing, determining the rental range associated with whatever development form it might take, and an opportunity to form the collective, which would see people who are interested in moving into this collective, into this building, investing some of their money to attract a developer to do it. So a developer isn't likely to come in and develop not without the security of knowing that they're going to have a steady tenant pool for a period of time because they need to recoup their costs. I don't know the details of how this would work, but there is more in the assessment. But it's about bringing together a group of people who know that they want to move to an independent living complex for seniors in the next 5 years, encouraging them to identify what they want in that, and determining what kind of rental range they're willing or able to pay, and then approaching a developer with that idea to see if there would be any interest in taking that on. I will say that Housing Nova Scotia recently increased their capital programs from $25,000 per unit that they would invest for affordable housing developments up to $50,000. So that's just in the past year they've doubled the amount of money a developer can access to create affordable units. And that's part of the program that was used. You may have heard the announcement from Mahone Bay yesterday that the 26-unit building that is coming to that community. All of those units have been funded through the province and the federal government coming together to support it through that program, so the $50,000 per unit. And additionally, they've also secured half of those units. All of them will be affordable, and half of them, 13, will also have rental supplements attached to them. So that's a program where the landlord is paid up to $250 to support people whose income is low enough that they can't afford even the affordable rent. So the federal government is currently developing a national housing strategy. I'm anxiously awaiting the budget. I think the 22nd is when the budget is being announced, to see what kind of money they're going to be putting into housing programs. There's nothing that keeps a municipality from working directly with the Canada Mortgage Housing Corporation to take action on affordable housing. You don't have to wait for the province to do something. You can go directly to the federal government if there's a project that you would like to see happening in your community. So we're hoping that the assessment here, along with the information that Queen's Care Society and the work that they're doing, can help position Queen's to be ready to receive funding from the federal government, provincial government, when that becomes available, hopefully very soon. If you don't like the idea of creating a tenant collective, there's also an idea bank which lists a series of other options or ideas for supporting the development of affordable housing in the community that we would ask that you direct staff to review and consider. I understand that you are completing a policy review currently, and so within your municipal planning strategy and land use bylaws, you may see some information in the idea bank that comes from a policy toolkit developed by a Master's of Planning student at Dow last year as well, that you may be able to consider including in your municipal planning strategy going forward to that could support affordable housing development in the community. In the idea bank, you'll also find ideas like just promoting Housing Nova Scotia programs with your local developers or even homeowners, letting them know that there is funding available to possibly support them if they meet the income criteria to adapt their home or create a second unit in their home for affordable housing. The flexibility in zoning rules, which you would see in the policy toolkit, some options there. To explore the municipal role in assisted living, not that there's a mandated responsibility, but there may be a role that you could play to support the development of assisted living. I don't know the MGA, your staff would know that a lot better than me, so they could tell you what you could or could not do. Exploring social enterprise is an option. In the community, this isn't all directed at municipal government either, that the community has has some role to play in the development of affordable housing as well. Raising awareness of residential tenancies, not so much here. We heard about discrimination quite a bit in Bridgewater, in the town of Bridgewater, that people were facing discrimination there in terms of accessing rental housing. Looking at supportive housing and another program, there was a program where the credit union was working in partnership with the architecture firm to provide good site design for individuals or families, households that wanted to convert maybe their basement into affordable housing unit. So they would provide them with the design and they could get a lower interest loan from the credit union to help them recoup that, which would increase the number of affordable housing units in a community. So there's a number of options in there that we would ask you to direct staff to review and consider, and we will send you a letter in a couple of months and see if you've identified anything that maybe we could support you with. Certainly with Councillor Fancy continuing to represent the Region of Queens at SHAC, he will be aware of the work that we're doing, and we appreciate that ongoing support and participation.
Nancy, on a previous slide that you had.
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah.
Can you give us a little more information on the Town of Bridgewater initiative that you listed there? Downtown.
Yeah. So I think that the suggestion for the Town of Bridgewater, let me just look it up in my book, my one copy here. So they were encouraging the town to consider using a development incentive program. Whether the MGA will allow it, they didn't seem to think the MGA would allow them to incentivize development for affordable housing. I said to them, explore what maybe you could do. I don't know what the MGA allows or doesn't. Just to promote infill development in currently, you know, vacant buildings along their development district, so along King Street really is what was being suggested, given that the town of Bridgewater is currently doing a revitalization project for that area. They thought that it would be great if, you know, above storefronts could be some affordable housing units included there. Town of Bridgewater does currently have a bonus density policy within their land use bylaws that it will allow a developer to build more units, I forget the percentage, maybe 25% more units in a building if the extra percentage is affordable. So it allows a developer to include a few more units than they otherwise would be allowed to, as long as those are affordable in some way. So I think they would be trying to encourage that a little bit more in that particular area, and to encourage and talk to developers about those possibilities above storefronts or infill areas where maybe there are vacant lots or vacant buildings, to see them redeveloped to include affordable housing. It was based on a program that's underway in St. John, New Brunswick. So again, their government act, the Municipal Government Act, may look differently and provide different provisions for different councils. They were suggesting the city in St. John provides a grant to property owners 5% of the construction cost over a 5-year period at a declining interest rate scale. And then they can access up to, once the building is redeveloped, it is taxed at a higher rate to recoup that initial upfront capital cost to support the financing piece and allow them to get started. And then once income starts coming in from the rental units, or from their rental properties, and they pay back a higher rate to the municipality.
Any questions or comments by councilors? Councilor Clancy?
Yeah. Along with it, can you explain, Dan, with Bridgewater, with the cohab, how that's...
the cohousing piece?
Yes. Is that, how is that working with trying to get seniors to commit together?
Well, I think it's just an idea at this point that we've been exploring. It came about in the fall. There's a program called Home Share Canada that attempts to match people living in communities. So maybe you're a homeowner that has a large old house and you're a single person and you'd like to fill up the house. It's maybe a bit difficult for you to provide the maintenance, and it matches you with others in the community that are looking for maybe lower cost affordable housing, more affordable housing, and supports people living together and sharing resources, and which also promotes, you know, it supports people who might be dealing with social isolation or living on their own or facing other challenges in their home. We're learning more about what that could look like, and I hope that we're able to find some people in the community that might be interested in taking that on. There's not much we can do to force them to do that, but trying to start the conversation and see if there's an interest for people to be living together. We have to look at bylaws. I know that they've been discussing this somewhere in the valley, and it's coming up. Oh, is that a rooming house? If you start bringing in people and living in your home, and then what are the bylaws in each municipal unit around rooming houses? There is a program that's thriving, I understand, in Alberta. There was one in Newfoundland. So it's an idea that is working in other communities. So it's something for us to learn more about as well, and to bring that conversation back to the community.
Good. Thank you. Any other councillors? Well, thank you, Nancy. Appreciate it very much. And for advisement, we will look to staff to review the housing needs assessment.
Yes. And I will follow up with a link to the assessment and also the policy toolkit, the full policy toolkit, too, for you to review. I'm not sure. They may have, our last SHAC meeting, I wasn't there. They may have told me that I needed to schedule presentations to planning advisory committees. I'm not sure. I think I saw that in the minutes. So I'm sure I will see you again in the future, certainly in the fall when we have the new census data. We will be updating, and we'd be happy to share that information back with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We now have Brooke Nodding, Executive Director of Blue Nose Coastal Action Foundation, will do a presentation. Good morning, Brooke.
Good morning. Okay. Thank you for having me this morning, and for those who don't know me, my name is Brooke Nodding, and I'm the Executive Director of the Blue Nose Coastal Action Foundation. And I'm here today to talk to the Region of Queens, just basically as an information session, kind of to let you know about who we are and what we do as an organization, where we work, how we work with other municipal partners, some of the types of projects that we undertake, some of the issues that we tackle that might be of interest to the Region of Queens, and why we think our group is important, and what we're looking for from you today. And then field any questions that you may have. So in start, our organization was founded.
Could you speak up? They can't hear you.
Okay. I will try my best. So Blue Nose Coastal Action Foundation was started over 20 years ago in December of 1993. We were first started basically in the towns of Mahone Bay and Lunenburg, and the issue in which we were founded was to address the lack of sewage treatment in the town of Lunenburg. So that was the reason we were started. We were started under a federal government program under the Green Plan at that time called the Atlantic Coastal Action Program. So we were one of 13 groups within the Atlantic Canadian region started under that program, and we received core funding for the first 15 years of our existence, and then that program was canceled. So since that time, some of the groups have folded, but others have continued on, and we've kind of diversified our partner base and funding base to continue our activities. So our vision is a healthy environment supporting thriving social communities. Our mission is to lead efforts to protect, enhance, and restore our ecosystem through research, education, and action. And we are governed by a volunteer board of directors, which represents multi-stakeholders on our board. This is just a quick list. I won't go through all the names or all the people on this list, but it's our current board of directors. And it's just there to show you the diversity of stakeholders represented on our board. So we have currently representatives from each of the five municipal units within Lunenburg County on our board. We have industry representatives from Michelin, and we also have volunteers within our community who sit on our board. This is a snapshot that's just taken from our strategic plan. We're in the last year of a five-year strategic plan, and it just goes to show you some of our guiding principles and our core pillars. So research, education, and action are the core pillars in which most of our work falls under those three areas. And one of the underlying philosophy of how our organization works is that we bring stakeholders together. We bring people together at the same table to work collaboratively towards positive solutions. So we are not an organization that, we're not a lobby group, we're not advocating one for issues. We do not lay blame or finger point or embarrass partners in the media. So at that, the way in which we operate is kind of led to the success of our organization, and it's why we have our trusted reputation and we're able to work with industry and government on positive projects. So this is a map of Southwest Nova and where we work. As I mentioned, we were originally started in, our focus area was Mahone Bay and Lunenburg. We then branched out to encompass all of Lunenburg County. And more recently, in the past 5 to 10 years, some of our work has taken us across the entire South Shore, from Hubbards to Argyle. And we've also been involved in a few international projects as well, both in South America and in Europe, most recently in Sweden. So we've grown quite substantially over the past number of years. This is just some examples of some of the work that we've done with some of our municipal partners in Lunenburg County. So with the municipality of the District of Lunenburg, we recently worked with them on the development of their coastal policy. We did the research and conducted their public consultation sessions for their development of a coastal policy, what a coastal policy might look like within the municipality. We partner quite frequently with their recreation department. We deliver a lot of environmental education programs locally. And one of the issues that we've been tackling for the past 10 years is the issue of straight pipe sewage systems entering into the LaHave River. So more recently, working directly with the municipality on what the potential for a wastewater management district along the LaHave River and what that might look like to address the issue of straight pipes. With the town of Bridgewater, we've been quite active, quite actively involved in their active transportation committee. So trying to create and encourage more opportunities for cycling and pedestrian opportunities for moving around the community. Water quality monitoring, so we've been contracted by the town of Bridgewater to conduct some water quality monitoring within some of their ponds and waterways in their public park system within the town. We sit on the organizing committee for the Growing Green Sustainability Festival that they have annually in Bridgewater. And we're most recently involved, we're a core partner in the Energize Bridgewater program, where they are looking at trying to find more sustainable energy energy programs for the town itself. And we're involved with stormwater management issues within the town of Bridgewater. We provided a best management practices guide for the public works and engineering departments there. And we also have done some low impact design demonstration projects within their public parks. So looking at rain gardens and bioswales and those types of projects, looking at localized flooding issues and trying to manage flooding within their park system. The municipality of the District of Chester, again, they contract us to do water quality monitoring in Fox Point Lake. Fox Point Lake is an area where there's a new golf course development adjacent to that lake, and there's a lot of concerns about how that development will impact water quality. So we're doing the monitoring there for Chester. Our clean boating program, we installed 4 sewage pump out facilities for boaters in Chester, Mahone Bay, Lunenburg, and Bridgewater. And so the municipality has taken over the management of the pump out station in Chester. And again, with environmental education, so we work quite closely with them on that. Within the town of Lunenburg, we've done a lot with solid waste education, proper sorting and recycling of solid waste within the town. We also helped them with the development of their municipal climate change action plan, and we did storm surge and flood projection models for the town of Lunenburg. And as I mentioned earlier, the reason for this group coming into existence to begin with was to bring sewage treatment to the town of Lunenburg. And so Lunenburg opened their sewage treatment facility in 2008. The town of Mahone Bay, we worked with them on, prior to the province instituting their bylaws on pesticides or their bans on pesticides, we conducted some early pesticide survey and information within the town of Mahone Bay. We annually, when the Wooden Boat Festival was taking place, we provided youth activities and youth programming during the festival. And most recently, they've contracted us to do to conduct the public consultation and the research exercise for their harbor management application to the province. So the town of Mahone Bay is looking at actively managing their harbor and putting in a mooring field within their harbor. So we're doing the work for that application. Some of the issues that we're currently tackling or are involved with that might be of interest to Queens, the region of Queens. We're looking at greening of businesses or working with businesses to make them more sustainable, more green. This is of particular interest provincially with the new trade agreements with the EU. European countries are more sustainability and environmental performance is more of a priority for partnering with looking for those qualities within Canadian businesses. Ecotourism opportunities, we're working right now with White Point Beach on what we might collaborate on, how we might collaborate on providing more experience-based tourism opportunities, especially with looking at our coastline and the natural beauty that we have in Nova Scotia and how we can attract more tourists here that are looking for more experience-based opportunities. We've recently received some funding from the Queens County Community Health Board, and so we're partnering with Queens County Community Health Board as well as schools in the area to develop a Learn to Grow program. So that's looking at sustainable local food, taking it from growing it, harvesting it, cooking it, and that sort of thing. So working with school-aged children on local food and the importance of local food. Low-impact design stormwater management projects. I mentioned this before. We're currently working with the town of Bridgewater on this, but this stormwater management is of particular interest to other municipal units as well. And there's, you know, with our climate change and increasing storm events and localized flooding, there might be some opportunities to do some work on some low-impact design stormwater management projects. Rural water conservation program. So this came as a result of the drought conditions that we experienced on the South Shore last summer. So looking at rural residents and how to conserve and manage water properly and better prepare ourselves for those times when those droughts might happen again. We've also done a lot of work in-stream fish habitat work, and we've worked with the Medway River Salmon Association on some in-stream fish habitat projects focusing on Atlantic salmon. And again, as I mentioned, we do a lot of environmental education and programming. So these are just some issues that might be of concern to Queens. Some of the other projects and issues that we take on, we do a lot of species at risk projects focusing on Atlantic whitefish, roseate tern, American eel, and Atlantic salmon. So we do a lot of fisheries research work. Our LaHave River Watershed Project, I mentioned this already with the straight pipe work, but we've been monitoring the quality of the LaHave River for the past 10 years. We do a lot of fish habitat restoration and watershed management plan. Climate change, the coastal policy I've already spoken about. Trying to right now work with the province to express the need for a provincial coastal strategy, and rather than expecting each individual municipality to take that on themselves. So looking for the province to take leadership on a provincial coastal strategy so it's consistent across the province. Municipal flood models and sea level rise projections, stormwater management we've talked about. Catchment lining, so living along the South Shore of Nova Scotia, acidic waterways is something that an issue that we face here, and the problem that causes for species. So we did a small project in the Gold River system looking at liming the land adjacent to a waterway to treat the land, which would then treat the water and help to increase pH of our local waterways. Based on some work that's done in Scandinavia, it's proven that if you treat the soils, you get a 20 to 30 year lasting project as opposed to just trying to lime the water itself. So it's a more sustainable way to do that kind of work. A new issue that we're looking to tackle is marine debris and microplastics. So we've just put in a funding application to Environment Canada to look at microplastics within the coastal waters in the Atlantic region, kind of replicating the work that's been done in the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence regions of the country and replicating it here in Atlantic. So we have partners in New Brunswick and Newfoundland and ourselves locally who will take on this work. The Petite Riviere Watershed Project, again, we do water quality monitoring, fish habitat restoration. A new project in that area, we're doing shale pit remediation. So looking at abandoned shale pits that are causing problems to local waterways and taking those pits and creating wetland habitat and wetland areas. So to get those pyritic slates under wetland soil so they're no longer oxidizing and creating pH spikes in local waterways. The Clean Boating Project I've mentioned already. Environmental education, our big flagship program that we run here is in partnership with Acadia University, and we are the local manager of a property owned by Acadia on Heckman's Island in Lunenburg County. So we run summer day camp programs and some family events out of the center there. Coastal erosion, we've done some shoreline demonstration projects looking at alternatives to armor rocking, so creating some demonstration projects there. Also looking at coastal erosion amongst the islands of Mahone Bay. looking at erosion rates and how quickly those islands are changing due to climate change impacts. And then another issue that we're looking at is the potential to develop artificial reefs and create marine habitat using the possibility of abandoned or derelict vessels. So looking at the possibility of, you know, repurposing these abandoned vessels for the purpose of marine habitat, but also tourism and economic development within our region. So why do we think our group is important? Again, I've mentioned this before, but we focus on positive action, not finger pointing or laying blame. We invite everyone to the table to work towards positive solutions. We are science-based, so a lot of our work is based on unbiased research and data collection, as opposed to opinions. We are the largest employer of scientifically trained youth along the South Shore. Last year at our height, we had a staff of 21 people, young people. Most of that are seasonal or summer students, so a lot of them come from the local area and are trained either at a university or community college taking science programs. We are a local service provider and a shared investment. So when we were part of the Environment Canada program, there was an independent economic impact study done on the organization, and it proved that for every dollar Environment Canada put into our organization, we were then able to leverage that 10 times over and increase that support. Building community networks, we have quite an extensive network ourselves, again, as I mentioned, for due to our trusted reputation and our work with government and industry and other NGOs within our community, so we have quite a large network. And we're developing an environmental capacity locally, so we have a service provision arm of our organization, so we're able to take on some of those smaller contract roles for municipal partners or industry partners, and trying to build that capacity locally so that industry and municipal governments don't have to go to the city or outside of the province to find that environmental expertise, that we're building that capacity locally. What we need from you, why we're here, talking to the region of Queens. As I mentioned, we've expanded. Our group has grown quite considerably over the past 5 to 10 years. When I started, it was a group of about 1 to 2 employees with an annual revenue of about $100,000 to $150,000 annually. So just this past year, we had a staff of 21 at our height, and our annual, we now have a budget of about $700,000 annually. So we have grown quite considerably. So we've grown not only in size, but in scope and our abilities, and we're looking to expand across the South Shore. So we're looking to engage new partners and create interest amongst other communities. Board representation, as I mentioned, we have all 5 municipal units within Lunenburg represented on our board, and we'd like to put the invitation out to other municipalities along the South Shore. If you are interested, would like in some input or involvement in our organization, that is one avenue that is available to you. Program support through communications. So although we've been around for 20 plus years, part of our problem is that we're a bunch of scientists and we're really bad at communicating. We do a lot of good work, a lot of good projects, but we're really bad at telling people about all the good stuff that we do. So one of our new hires is a communications person, so we're starting to try and better communicate the successes of our organization and the good work that we do. But we'd like to partner with other groups such as yourselves and help spread the word of the work that we're doing and partner and do more work together. Support in building community networks. I mentioned we have quite an extensive network already, but we're always looking to create more partnerships and learn about new potential partnerships. So in the region of Queens, is there industry, other community groups, other partners that you think might be a fit for us or might be interested in what we do? How can we, maybe you can make those invitations or make those connections. And finally, just collaboration and creating a healthy environment on the South Shore. It's our ultimate goal is to have a healthy environment, and you know, how can we work together to achieve that across the entire South Shore, not just Lunenburg County. And that's it. So I'd just like to thank you for having me today, and I'll field any questions. But as I mentioned, we're expanding, and we'd like to partner and do some good work here in Queens as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Brooke. Any councillors have questions or comments?
An amazing presentation.
Thank you.
We're kind of speechless because I didn't know all this was happening. So you're right about your community.
Yeah.
But hats off to you for what you're doing. I guess I want a better picture of what you're doing throughout the year. I understand in the summer you have students.
Mm-hmm.
What does your core team look like? Where are you located, and what
sort
of things are you doing?
So our office, we're located in Lunenburg,
right.
In the town of Lunenburg itself. So as I mentioned, kind of at the height, our busy time is our field season, which basically starts in April and runs through till November, even into December nowadays,
okay.
More recently. So we have most of our staff is in the summertime with university students, but we do have seasonal field staff as well. So our year-round full-time staff right now is around seven to eight. I do have some senior staff who lay themselves off, you know, maybe January, February, but we're busy fairly year-round now. So we're in the field May to November, December. Kind of the winter months is busy doing our project reports, doing our funding applications and our proposals and project development.
I noticed in one of your presentations that you are at festivals, and
mm-hmm.
what does that look like? What do you do? Is it an education?
We do vary depending on the event. It could be as simple as us just being there having a booth or having information and talking to the public. At other times we've actually run activities and done some programming with youth. So it depends on the event and what they're looking for in terms of, you know, we have the ability to run some programming, but other times we're just there as information.
Good. Councilor Kelly?
I was interested in, you said that you used to be part of Environment Canada. What's
mm-hmm.
your current business model?
So right now, as I mentioned, we were receiving core funding from Environment, which that ceased in around 2008. So we haven't had core funding since then. Since then, that's where a lot of our growth has happened. We've really concentrated on, we've been working with business consultants on trying to create, to develop ourselves more as a business and have a social enterprise model. So we have a consulting arm of our organization, and we do some small contracts. We are still probably about 65% of our revenue still comes from government grants and contributions, so we're still accessing those funding pots, but we're trying to diversify that. We don't have a membership, paid membership. We've never gone to the public looking for funds, so we've never really done some serious fundraising. I don't think that's something that we would ever, that would be an avenue that we would really rely heavily on, but it might be something that we pursue in terms of event-specific type fundraising. So that's basically my job, is to find the partners and develop, expand on our funding sources. So some of the more interesting things that we've started to explore and some partners that we're developing is looking to industry partners. For example, Amos Pewter has approached us to see if there's some way that you know, maybe a certain proceeds of one of their signature pieces can contribute to the work that we do. Or there's a local author who is writes children's stories, and so she highlights us in her book, and then some of the proceeds of her book sales would come to us. Or kind of those sorts of opportunities we're starting to explore more and more. But we do rely quite heavily still on government grants and contributions and our paid contract work that we do.
Oh, I was going to say 35% then obviously comes from revenue from the work that you contract with to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Deputy Mayor McLeod?
Very busy from all your activities. When you say you do this or you help with this, and, you know, what is your actual role with all of these other types of partners that you have? Do you actually do research on their behalf, or do you want, you know, discover what they're doing and then kind of go from there and get some other opportunities for action in these areas?
We do all, we do both of those. So for example, some of our contracts, we have, one of our contracts is with the commercial Elver license holders. And so we do fisheries research. So the American eel is up for listing as endangered under the federal government, with the federal government. And so obviously the commercial license holders do not want to see that listing go forward. So we, as an independent research group, we conduct the research based, so we do counts on East River Chester. So we are determining what the number of elvers are in comparison to the catch. And so all that information goes to DFO management in terms of, you know, looking at the license requirements and the SARA, the possible species at risk listing. So we're doing that independent research for that species. There are other ways in which we work for the municipality, for the town of Bridgewater, for example. You know, they contract us to do their water quality monitoring, and so we report back to them. We provide them advice or some solutions to, if we see a problem, if the results point towards a particular problem, then we provide them with potential solutions.
Quite similar to, and you're on the coastal, you know, sort of focusing on the coastal areas, but we have Mersey Tobiad Research Institute. So you're kind of similar to that, but have a different focus.
Yes, so, and we've partnered with MTRI in the past, and you know, we do work with them on certain things. They do a lot of their work kind of in Kedgy, and a forestry is
right,
one of their big things, forestry and species at risk. We do a lot of our work, like you said, is coastal. We do a lot of it is water-based, so even if it's not marine, it's freshwater. So yeah, we have partnered with MTRI on certain projects. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds great.
Any other councillors? Well, thank you for your presentation,
thank
Brooke.
You.
We will take your presentation under advisement through staff.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I wonder if we could have the lights turned on. Councilor Muse, could you put the screen on? Agenda under 4.0, tabling on petitions. Are there any petitions to be tabled today? Hearing none, we will move on to 5.0. And before we take comments from the public gallery, I would mention that we are wearing purple ribbons today, and it is in relationship to March being Epilepsy Awareness Month. I would also like to add that Councillor Johnson is unable to attend today. He's in the United States providing backup service for electrical needs due to the storm they're experiencing. At this point, I would ask if there's any comments from the public gallery. And if so, I would like you to perhaps state your name and address, and we'll limit discussion to 5 minutes per.
Maybe it might be 10 this morning where there's nobody else here. I'm that will probably make comments. Leon Robertson, College Street in Liverpool. I was pleased to hear the presentation with respect to the Social Housing Action Coalition and the work that they're doing. And listening to the radio this morning, the new project which was mentioned here this morning down in Mahone Bay. We've had a lot of studies over the years done with respect to seniors housing and also assisted living for seniors. And I know it's you people are working on it to a point, but I think we're getting to the point now where we need some further action and see if we can get something going in those areas, particularly assisted living for the seniors, and so that we don't keep losing them to other areas of the province. And I've mentioned that previously. And it's my understanding now that there could be funds available through the provincial and also through the federal coffers. And now is the time, perhaps, maybe to get on with the to get on with the job. Anyway, I know the mayor has indicated that, that this information will be turned over to staff for further consideration, and that is good. The other thing I was going to mention was my 5 minutes not up yet.
No.
Just with respect to Queen's Place, I know there's a change of the guard there, sort of thing, and Steve will be working here. And also with the Queen's Place, as I understand, the good thing over the past couple of weeks, the announcements of two big events coming here, in addition to what else is going on, that is the two concerts. It's good to hear that. It's good to keep the place going. And hopefully, the more we can get there, the lower we can put the deficit at the end of the year for the operations of the Queen's Place. And it's good to see the sound system being added to the agenda. I may not be able to be here because of another commitment when it's discussed, but if it works as good as the one that Steve uses over at Queen's Place, you can hear him all over the area there when he makes announcements. It was very difficult with the second presentation here this morning, and hopefully we get something done there. Just one last item, the twinning of the 103 highway. With respect to meetings, there's meetings in two areas in Moonburg County, and not further than that, according to the press, the Shoal area got in touch with the provincial government, and they put on one, or did put on one for down there with respect to the Twin Highway. I wonder, did we make any effort to have a meeting here? I think it's very important, because they're talking about tolls, they're talking about, you know, between the highway is one thing, and then the tolls to pay for it afterwards. I realize it has to be paid for, but we pay a lot in highway taxes now with respect to gas and registration and so on. And I'm talking to a number of people around, they say it's not so much the highway, it's the way people drive onto it. And I think that's part of the problem. The highway itself, if people didn't use their cell phone so much and do the texting and so on, it wouldn't be maybe quite as dangerous. This is what you hear from a lot of people. Anyway, was any effort made, Mr. Mayor, to have a meeting here so that people here could have their input? Because a lot of people have to travel to Halifax for appointments and so on, and there's even some people that work there on a regular basis.
Thank you, Leon. I did attend the meeting in Bridgewater on the twinning and tolling. I saw a large number of residents of Queens there. For your information, at that meeting, the overwhelming support was there for twinning the highway, and it was almost total opposition to tolling the highway.
That's what I heard in the press. Yeah.
Very much so. The meeting in Shelburne came later on. We did not intercede and ask for a meeting here on the basis that we felt that it was very well represented in Bridgewater, and that information was not supportive of tolling.
Great. Yeah, I was unavailable to get there at that particular time. Anyway, I think my 5 minutes is up, Mr. Mayor, and hopefully, if I'm not here for the discussion on the sound system, I'll hear a little bit later.
Thank you very much,
Leon.
I don't see anyone else in the public gallery today that would want to make a comment. So, Councillor Frelick has an issue to bring forward.
I would just like to have someone explain our agenda. It's very different from when we started back in November. And I think some of us understand, but it would be great for the public to show or to understand what we're showing on our cover sheet.
Yes, CEO.
Sure. So through the mayor to council and for the public, I guess we've got the radio recording us too. So what we've endeavored to do, council approved strategic priorities, and in January this council approved three: growing the population and economy, delivering desirable municipal services, and governing to best municipal practices. So is in an attempt to show that we're focusing our work on government or on municipal priorities, we've created a checkbox next to it just to show, and we'll track this over time to be able to determine how our work is aligning up with our priorities. The way this is laid out may be a little bit of work in process, but we've been doing it for about 2 months right now.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. We will move on to approval of minutes under 6.1. I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes for the regular council of February 28, 2017. May I move it? Councillor Hughes, seconder. Councillor Fraley, any discussion? Ready for the question? All those in favor? It is unanimous, thank you. Under 7.0, dangerous or unsightly premises, we have nothing today. 8.0, economic development, we have nothing to come forward today. Under 9.0, CAO's office, we have 9.1, Elm Street, repeal of street closure resolution. Councillor Kelly, would you like to take the lead on this?
It is recommended that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality, number one, repeal the resolution resulting from item 13.1 from the January 10th, 2017 meeting of Council respecting the closure of Elm Street.
Do I have a second? Councillor Fisk? Would you...
Overview?
Yes, if you would.
Sure. So through the mayor to council, this and the next motion go together. Following with some of the feedback we've received from councillors after the election, one of the items that was on our list was to deal with two Elm Streets in Liverpool. The Elm Street off of in Queens. There's a short street off of Main Street that has no homes on it. Initially, staff had moved forward a process to close the street, but upon review, because there's driveway access from the street, even though it's not the frontage of the properties, it would make things easier for everyone if instead of closing it, we simply renamed it.
Any questions or comments of councillors? Councillor Fancy?
I look at this and I say, well, what do we gain, what do we lose of this? And if there's driveways going in there, do they have driveways going another way? Or is that taking away their primary driveway? All those questions. Is it going to be any benefit, any subtraction from us?
So through the mayor to council, again, if we closed the street, we wouldn't maintain it, so snow plowing and such.
Right.
And so there are two driveways off of that street, so it wouldn't make sense for us to actually close it and abandon it as a street.
Does driveways go the other way too, or is that the only access they have?
That's their only access is
okay.
From that street. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
Any other councillors? Are you ready for the question?
Questions.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous, thank you. We'll move on to 9.2, Elm Street, renaming of roads. Councillor Kelly.
It is recommended that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality, number one, direct staff to initiate the process for operational policy 6, naming and renaming of roads to rename Elm Street.
Second. Councillor Crowley. CAO, would you like to hear some of this?
Things are going forward. We'll announce that there's an opportunity for people to bring forward ideas or recommendations for renaming. Our policy on renaming suggests that it's used as an opportunity to recognize past people from Queens. So our communications department will put that out, and we'll collect what ideas come forward, bring that forward to council.
Any councillors have any questions or comments? Hearing none, are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor? It is unanimous, thank you very much. So now we'll move on to 9.3, Operational Policy 81, of repeal. I would ask Councillor Crowley to take the lead.
The
Council of the Region of Queens Municipality Repeal the presently existing policy 81 that has been approved on 23rd June 2015.
Seconder? Mr. Fisk? I would ask our municipal clerk, Ann McDonnell, if you would like to provide an update on this.
Sure.
It's whatever you prefer.
Basically, this comes up, again, this is 9.3 and 9.4, and this is as a direct consequence of the lease that the Region of Queens has entered into with Julie Babin. And as part of her agreement with the Region of Queens, she is going to be programming space in the common room and the in the Town Hall Arts and Culture Center. Presently, the operational policy 81 as it stands does not accommodate that. It does not, basically as it stands, RQM is responsible for programming that space. RQM sets the schedule of fees for that space, and RQM is contact for people who want to book that space. We don't want that to be that way because that violates the lease that we've got with Julie Babin. So as a consequence of that, we are requesting that you repeal the current policy 81, and the attachment is as it stands. And then you'll see on 9.4, we've attached a replacement policy 81 for your consideration.
Any questions or comments with councilors? Councilor Benson?
With this change, will that make this so that everything that has to go through Julie, is this what it is, or could there still be other things still scheduled?
Not entirely, sir. Basically, Julie is going to be responsible for bookings in common, in multi-purpose room in common.
Okay.
The volunteer space will still go entirely through Region Queens.
Which you call volunteer space?
Office. I believe there's... If you sort of in your packet go to part 9.4,
okay.
And then at the very end of that, as an attachment, is the lease between RQM and Julie. And then if you find this Schedule A, and so this is the upstairs of the Town Hall Arts and Cultural Center. So what we're saying is that this common display area that falls under Julie, the multi-purpose room also falls under Julie. This workshop area, that is her space, that's what she rented exclusively for herself. And the volunteer office, this is the shared space that presently Privateers, they have
right.
space there. And there is, if you consider the lease with the Astor Theater and Acadia First Nations, they are entitled to 16 hours of free space in that volunteer office.
Right.
And any other either nonprofit or community groups that would want to use that space, they have a right to that space. But the way the proposed policy 81 is written is they would actually go through the Economic Development Department here. So RQM remains responsible for that.
My understanding was at the start when Ms. Babin had the two rooms upstairs that of course we already read our agreement to what she would get and what we would get from this, but that it could be other things scheduled in there without her, that we were allowed to use the space, but not everything had to go through her, or that's my understanding is the agreement at the beginning, but maybe I'm wrong.
My understanding of Lisa was that she is responsible for programming that space. That means
okay.
she is responsible for booking the use of that space.
Okay.
And so as a consequence, if people wanted to book that space, they would go to her.
Okay, that was my understanding, because I think I asked a question here when we did it, and I thought I was giving the answer that we could still program. We could still do things, but I guess maybe I misunderstood.
Any other councilor? Councilor Kelly?
Well, we're talking about 9.4 now. I think we've moved
into that. No, I think we're still on 9.3, but I allowed the question because it
pertains to 9.3.
Should I wait till 9.4 then when we talk about the actual new, okay?
Okay, so the conversation we're limiting to 9.3.
Yes.
Any further comments or questions of councilors? Are we ready for the question on 9.3?
Question.
All those in favor? It is unanimous. Thank you very much. Now we will move on to 9.4 operational policy. Councilor Frelick, would you like to take the lead?
I so move that the Council of the Region of Queens approve the update of Policy 81 as presented during this meeting.
Second for that question? Councilor Fisk? I think perhaps our municipal clerk has given us the information on this. Is there anything to add?
Not really. The only thing that I would draw your attention to is that this Policy 81 purposefully excludes the fee schedule that Julie will propose. The reason being, she signed a 3-year lease. So like at time zero, when she takes possession of her space, so April 1st, she's going to have an idea of the type of groups that are going to want to use the spaces, but she's not going to necessarily know everything in advance, which is to say there's going to be a bit of a learning curve. So in order to have a little bit of flexibility in terms of her speech schedule, which by the way she doesn't set, she suggests, council considers, council approves. Council doesn't have to approve it. You're allowed to go, you know, negotiate back and forth because it is a municipal asset. That's important to consider. Anyway, if you look at the proposed policy 81, part 1.3bi, she's able to provide quarterly updates to the fee schedule. That's going to reflect both the request for them and the money that people can afford to pay, which is to say that we're trying to build in a little bit of flexibility because it is ultimately a municipal asset and there's got to be an element of fairness in terms of the choice.
Any questions or comments of councillors? Councillor Kelly?
I just want to clarify and be clear. Julie's responsible for the upstairs rooms for booking, but yet she's responsible for the budget for facility janitorial services. Is that correct? Because that covers the whole building, right?
In her lease, if I recall correctly, we provide janitorial services, and by we, I mean Region Queens.
Yeah.
She is responsible for keeping her workspace clean, which is the room that she's going through, the workshop area.
Okay, so she has a budget of $2,500, maintenance of the existing programming budget. That's a programming budget. And she just has to make sure that the current janitorial services are used to cover the upkeep and maintenance of the rooms that she's responsible for. Is that correct?
Could you repeat the question, please?
It just says here, okay, maintenance of facility janitorial service at current service levels, right? So that just means she
that's
makes sure that
do.
Janitorial services.
CAO, if you'd like to respond.
So that's the municipality covenants. We maintain the current service levels for janitorial.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. I totally misread that. So that all of those things listed under there is what that, okay, well that takes care of that then.
So she's under business covenants.
Right, gotcha.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
Councilor Fraley?
One of the things we've run into in the past is getting people up the stairs. One of the ideas I know, I've talked to Julie about it, is to have the foyer, the walls leading up to the stairs and around the existing rooms to be part of the display. I don't see it listed in this as part of her responsibility. Should it be listed? Because it is going to be an active area that shows that we have art upstairs and things happening. Right now it's kind of a blank canvas and it's been an ongoing issue.
Well, the item under consideration, sir, is the potential new policy 81, which is only dealing with the booking of these spaces. The actual presentation of those spaces, I believe, does not necessarily fall under the purview of this item.
Where would it fall?
Well, first it would require a different motion, so it would require a different report. When we were working out the lease with Julie, accessibility wasn't really mentioned, because again, at the end of the day, it is a municipal asset, and you can't necessarily have a tenant responsibility or responsible for increasing the accessibility of a municipal asset.
No, maybe you've misunderstood. I'm talking about the wall space that's okay. I'd like to see a response.
So again, that question isn't related to the fees and booking schedule, but the planning for the wall space is not expressly in what she had proposed to us, and we put in the agreement. Clearly, there's opportunities to discuss and use that space, and we can update you with that. I'm sure that she'd be happy to use that space. Some of that space, though, is the Astor, so there's some discussions to have. But I believe everybody wants to use
not past the stairway, though.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Any other councilors? Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of the motion? Thank you very much.